You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 72 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 20th, 2009, EMEs and Virtual Integrity. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. First of all, thanks again to our loyal listeners and any first-time listeners. We're glad you joined us. Hopefully, we'll talk about something that will help you out in your church, school, or whatever ministry it is that you are involved with. Joining me, as usual, is Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and welcome to the full-fledged celebration season in the Wells. It has been a busy time. I know you've been busy and traveling.
Yep, it's not over yet. We're just kind of at the halfway point of all of our web streaming we have later this week, and we'll talk about that later in the show. We're doing some call services, one tonight. We record the show on Tuesday, so we have a Tuesday night streaming event. So those of you that are listening on Wednesday will have missed it, but that's for the vicars. But the big one is for the pastors on Thursday. So that's the high point, I think, of the ministerial education program. So letting those pastors find out for the first time where they're going. I remember those days well. I went through two of those. That's exciting times. You went through one, right?
That's right.
If you count vicar year, I suppose that's two. But
that's true. Yeah, and a lot of my husband's classmates will be hopefully reassigned this year as they've been serving in various tutor calls and other non-permanent positions. And so it is very exciting times. I managed to slip in a visit with you and Julie Duran, our Wells webmaster, at Martin Luther College this weekend, and that was a real high point for me. And just being there at the call service, it's just an electric feeling. It's just really, really thrilling to be a part of that and see the next generation of called workers being assigned.
It is fun to watch God work.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah, it was good to see you, although you appeared in the gym there dripping wet from...
Like a drowned rat. Little spring rain.
Spring rain. It was a monsoon of sorts. That was crazy. But I think everybody there had a wonderful time and enjoyed the services. There were a bunch of services, a commencement concert the night before, and good stuff up in New Ulm. So we're going to do it again up in Mequon later this week. The subject for today, we've got a special interview. We're going to play that here real quickly. An interview we had with Dan Lohrman, who is the author of a recently introduced book called Virtual Integrity. This is a timely topic because as Christians, and I know, none of us are excluded from the temptations that are in our face or on our screens on the web every day. And we're not just talking about pornography per se, but all kinds of things about addictions and different things that misdirect us from our mission, the God-given missions that we have in life, which is to essentially share our faith and grow closer to Him.
Yeah, I think you'll be surprised when we listen to Dan's interview. I think our listeners will be surprised, rather, to hear how the marketers just really structure things to draw us in. And so, like you said, not just to things that we would consider taboo or bad necessarily, but things that just get us deeper and deeper into wasting time and pursuing things that take us away from our mission, like you said.
Yeah, a lot of our listeners are friends of technology. Let's put it that way. They like and enjoy technology. They're obviously listening to a podcast about it. We try and bring in the ministry aspect as much as possible, but it's easy to get addicted to the internet And that may not sound like necessarily a sin, but obviously it can lead to distractions that prevent us again from doing what we're supposed to be doing while we have this time of grace on earth. And Dan emphasizes that, and it's an interesting. He comes to us from with an interesting background. I think he said he was Baptist in our pre-interview conversation, but he has a lot of Lutheran connections, and he was recommended to us by one of our Wells members and a listener, a longtime listener, Cindy, from Michigan, who works for Dan. And his perspectives are, I think, real valid. If you read the book, and I think you'll get intrigued by some of the conversation we have with Dan. It really covers a lot of the things that are more common sense, but some things that you just don't think about when you're on the internet. Things that can happen to you without you even knowing it.
Yeah, I think just from a practical point of view, I'm always interested in things because of being a mom. You know, mm-hmm. looking at it from my from the perspective of protecting my children and helping them to have a discerning heart as they surf the World Wide Web. But you know, Dan kind of brought it home that it's not just about the kids; it's about our own accountability, our own responsibility, living the Christian life, walking the walk as we have our virtual selves as well as our real selves, mm-hmm. you know. So yep. So I think there's something there for everyone.
Yep, how you're representing yourself, what is your profile in your digital world. So let's listen to the interview with Dan, and then Sal and I will come back and we'll talk a little bit more about it. Joining us today is Daniel Lohrmann, and I'll read the back of his book jacket for everybody who would be interested, and I think everybody should want to take a look at his book, Virtual Integrity, Faithfully Navigating the Brave New Web. Dan is an award-winning computer security expert, directs the State of Michigan's Office of Enterprise Security, and is Michigan's Chief Information Security Officer. He was named the 2008 Chief Security Officer of the Year by SC Magazine, and one of the 25 most influential people in the security industry by Security Magazine. It's our pleasure to have Dan on the show. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks a lot, Martin. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much for taking the time. I realize you're busy because security is a never-ending quest, I assume, for the state of Michigan and in many other states, I suppose.
Yeah, plenty to keep us busy, especially with new headlines every day about identity theft and different challenges we face online.
Absolutely. So maybe just start by telling us a little bit about yourself beyond just what I read on the back of the book, your work and your background in information security. Sounds interesting.
Well, sure. First of all, I'm a father. I have four children. We have two teenage daughters, and we've adopted two, a 4 and a 6-year-old as well. We've adopted mm-hmm. Paul and Lydia from South Korea, and Lydia we adopted from China. And
wonderful.
I have my two teenage daughters, 16 and 18, and one's graduating. So that's a big
it's
part
a
of
busy
my
busy Lohrmann household. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, and they're all on the Internet, too.
So if you didn't have enough stress, yes.
Absolutely. And I started my career at the National Security Agency in Washington, and I got my master's degree at Johns Hopkins. For those Lutherans out there, I actually went to Valparaiso University as my mm-hmm. undergraduate, got my degree in computer science, and was 13 years in the intelligence community, was in England for 7 years as part of that with Lockheed Martin and Mantech, doing a variety of technology jobs. And anyway, I've been in the state of Michigan. I came here and joined state government back in 97 as the chief information officer for our Department of Management and Budget. And back in those days, it was more about Y2K and those kinds of things, and then we got involved in Michigan.gov and our portal, government portal, and websites here, and then for the last 7 years, been the chief security officer for Michigan.
Super.
So Dan, your book is really interesting. It grabs you right off the cover with your title, "Faithfully Navigating the Brave New Web," and you know I like that you kind of combine your faith with your message of security there. I'm guessing that was a lot of the motivation for writing the book. Can you tell us a little bit about what got you started, what message you were trying to share with your book?
Yeah, well, thank you, Sally, for that. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, people talk about identity theft. I think everyone's probably seen different commercials and situations on identity theft. Well, in the book, I also talk about how our integrity is attacked when we go online, and I coined a phrase called integrity theft, which is a little different. But the idea that not just our money can be stolen, but our reputation, our integrity, are basically there are different things that attract us online that we call tempting the click, that every time we go online, that even though you may be going to weather.com or some different website that you think is somewhat innocent, oftentimes you're being tempted or attracted to go somewhere else. And you know, how often do we find ourselves 5-10 minutes later saying, how did I end up at this website, you know, as you surf the web? So it's really a deliberate process that web designers use, and it can be used for good. It can be used for positive things. I'm pro-internet, but there's also a dark side to the internet, and there's many, many ways that Christians can be tempted to the dark side and many shades of gray online.
Was this your first book then?
This is my first book.
So what kind of experience was that? Was it what you expected?
It was a long process. it took a while to do it. I've been blogging for a while. I write for Government Technology Magazine. I write a column for Public CIO Magazine and a lot in the public sector and in the security industry. But I really was trying to reach Christians and others who want to surf their values and who I saw a lot of books out there, you know, that really have good answers, but many of them I find to be simplistic in many ways. You know, just apply filters and you're done, or just do this and that, three tips that, you know, help here. And a lot of those are good tips and a lot of great websites. I mentioned many of those in the book, but I think also many times they're too simplistic and they don't deal with some of the deeper issues that we face in cyberspace.
So you work for a government agency, which I kind of equivocate to a nonprofit like a Lutheran church body. Do you struggle with funding and the ability to kind of keep the bad guys out and do all the things you need to do with security and to protect your users and a constant struggle to pay for it all?
Well, certainly funding is always a challenge. Certainly, you know, government right now is, we're going through really hard times across across the country. Mm-hmm. State governments are struggling, and California's in a budget crisis. Michigan is in a budget crisis. I mean, really cutting and layoffs and furlough days in the summer. So funding is always a challenge. There are some cost-effective ways we've been able to do some things. We've gotten some government grants, Homeland Security grants.
Right.
We've been able to go after. There are some low-cost things that people can do, and I found one of the other themes in the book that I really touch on is it's not just, you know, these topics of faithfully navigating the brave new web. It's not just for novices or for people that are just starting to use the internet or Facebook or whatever. But even the best and brightest have moral issues, and I found that many times the challenges we face are really moral and ethical issues at their root, and our faith, you know, can guide us and can give us a lot of direction and motivation for living out, you know, the right path, both at home, at work, at school, wherever someone is, without having that, you know, that moral background. I've seen, you know, some very, very smart technology people who thought they were invincible end up in jail.
right. I raise the question because, you know, in the first chapter of your book, you use the analogy of David versus Goliath and the fact that the average user is really at a disadvantage when you think about all the things that are working against them on the web at this point with phishing and spam and all the things that are there to, you know, plus the whole industry of pornography and gambling and all those things, just tempting people to sacrifice their integrity.
Absolutely. You know, one marketing survey I saw, I think it was 2008, $100 billion spent to market to us every year. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely an amazing amount of, and that's why the David Goliath, you know, analogy is if you think that you're not, you know, susceptible, or that, you know, that you're not going to be tempted, I think you're naive. You know, the reality is that there are just so many ways that that, you know, technology is used for good, but it's also used for evil right now in society, and there's so many different tools that web designers use to say, you know, what are people clicking on? Why are they clicking? Should we swap this image out for this image? How can we get you to go to these places? And it is an ongoing battle that we all face when we go online, and many people just aren't aware of that battle. They just don't see the implications of their actions.
Right. You follow up that with a question or with a chapter on why filtering is not enough, essentially saying, you know, don't be fooled into thinking that just because you have some kind of software that you've paid, you know, $5 or $10 a month to your ISP, or you've downloaded Cyber or Safe something or other, that you're good, that really doesn't preserve really anything for you. I mean, it does. It almost leads to a false sense of security.
Absolutely. Well, you know, filters can be great, especially for young children, and mm-hmm. and to a certain extent, they can work for adults at work and things. But, you know, the reality is, if someone just Googles, you know, the words how to get around filters, there's millions of websites that'll
right.
tell you how to do it. So it's you know, and filters, even when they're when you do have them, you know, who's administering them? Who has the passwords at home? Are they installed correctly? Are they really stopping the things you want to stop? Are they letting things through that shouldn't be getting through? And even if all that is working correctly, people can go to libraries. They have portable devices. People surf the web with BlackBerries and cell phones. And there's just so many different access devices that people can use. So, you know, filters can help. They can be a positive thing, and I encourage them in certain situations. But they certainly, I've actually seen cases where they've caused more problems because they create a false sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan, I'm assuming that you'll want to share with our listeners what your book tells them instead of filtering or in addition to filtering. You know, I'm thinking of it from a parental standpoint. Like you said, filtering's good for small children or whatever. But, you know, teaching our children a discerning heart, teaching them to live their life of faith online, and also just as adults, you know, how we can be more accountable and walk the right path as we're in this potentially tempting situations online.
Sally, that's a great point, and it is absolutely, first of all and foremost, a heart issue. And you know, anyone who works in technology will know that it's you know, we say in the business world, it's people, process, and technology, and it's you know, people issues are the heart issues, and your desires, and you know, wanting to live for God. The process issues, you know, can you keep it? You know, once you got something working, can you do it over and over again, next week, next month, next year? You know, it's not great that, it's not, you know, if you got something working once, that's great, but can you keep it going? I mean, some of the different tools that I talk about in the book and are accountability software, which can help. We use Covenant Eyes, which is one program. There's Safe Eyes out there. There's others. But Covenant Eyes is a program that is accountability software where I have a partner, and literally my wife sees the websites I go to. And it's a kind of a summary, kind of a report card kind of thing, and not necessarily showing all the nitty-gritty detail. It's kind of summarized, and she has the ability to drill down and see more detail if she wants to see it. It's very easy to use, and you know, quite frankly, it's very effective at making helping to diminish temptation, because you know we're all tempted. Jesus was tempted. But if you're tempted online and you know that, you know, your accountability partner and other men or women or your spouse are going to see that report, I think that can help. You know, putting for children, putting computers in common areas, and, you know, knowing where they're going, you know, surfing with them sometimes, those kinds of things can help. I think, you know, the most important thing is like you mentioned, Sally, is where your heart is. And oftentimes if you say, you know, why do I want to go to these sites? You know, what are you actually doing with your time? How are you spending your time online? A lot of times that's an indication of where your heart is at.
One of the I think, very practical or pragmatic chapters in your book is the Just Do It chapter. And you kind of touched on some of the things that you talk about in there, but essentially you have a whole section on seven habits of online integrity. Some of these are, you know, what I would call just basics of good Christian values, and you know, regardless of whether you're online or offline, just putting your faith into practice in your day-to-day living, whether that be your digital life or your flesh and bones life, I guess you could put it. But I think you have to intentionalize some of these things too. It's not just, you know, by our sinful nature, some of these things don't come natural. In fact, it's easier to go off the wagon than stay on it. But you talk about refreshing your values and pledging personal online integrity. You talk about trusted accountability, applying helpful technology, balancing online and offline life. I think that's huge. People can get addicted to the internet, even if they're not doing anything that's violating their personal integrity or their Christian life. It still becomes a vice or something that is addicting.
Absolutely, that's exactly right. And I think you know, balancing, you know, and there's practical tips and techniques in each of these different steps. You know, and we do many of these things. You know, some of your listeners may be thinking, well, you know, why do I need to make a pledge? Or, you know, but we do that with diets. We do that with New Year's resolutions. We do that with exercise, and you know, those are the kinds of things that can help us as we lay that out. You know, and even in the accountability area, I think, you know, a lot of times I think men especially think accountability is for wimps, or, you know, it's for people that, you know, are going to fail. They need to be accountable to someone. But, you know, really, I view it just the opposite as that. You know, the most successful people have mentors at work, and the best sports athletes get to have, you know, the quarterback coach, or the, mm-hmm. you know, the best piano players get to have, you know, the best teachers. So, I mean, to me, these steps can help us develop those disciplines in our life and practice our Christian faith online.
And Dan, toward the end of your book, you dedicate some time to looking into the future. And I guess it would be interesting if you could share a little bit of your vision of where you see things going, maybe some more integrity-based sites developing on the web, or what kind of future you see for us in this realm?
Well, that's a great question, Sally. I take a stab at the future and where I see things going. You know, one of the things I mentioned is surfing your values, and I tried in the last two chapters to kind of lay out a vision for helping people see how that may play out in the future. And one example I give is, you know, we're trying to build end-to-end trust. We're trying to build, you know, more and more opportunities online, both from a security and a privacy perspective, but also from a faith perspective. And so just imagine, for example, I give an example of a hotel, but I've also used another example as I speak around the country, of, you know, you take your child to the mall and you go to a Disney store, and you expect, yeah, security and privacy and a certain kind of an experience with your child, maybe my 6-year-old son, but you also expect the values of that store to come across in the way people are dressed, the way they behave, the way you experience. The same things need to be available online. So how do you do that? How do you have values respected online? And that's kind of a radical thought, but, you know, we're heading into a world where there's going to be more and more virtual worlds, more and more people buying more things online. Almost anything you do in the real world is going to be a virtual world alternative there, you know, 3D, and it's going to get, you know, we think back 10 years to where we were 10 years ago, and then kind of fast forward 10 years, it's kind of a scary thought a little bit, but, you know, so even today, right now, people who use Facebook see that they target those ads, or MySpace, they take with your interests, and they target you and send you opportunities to buy things in those areas. And so one option I mentioned is, what if you had a values-based profile, and you said, these were the things that I believe, this is who I am, and you kind of filled out that Facebook profile that people often do, but then content was delivered to you based on your values. Now, I'm not talking about filtering now. Filtering is where you block the things you don't want, and everything is kind of sent to you, but you block the things you don't want. This is more like the content being delivered based on your values. And I think you're going to start seeing more and more of this. I've been working with Google and Microsoft. It's kind of exciting, and some others talking about this. And I think they all have their own words for it. Microsoft calls it end-to-end trust. But it's the whole, it's more than just security and privacy. It's your whole experience online. For some people, this is kind of scary because they think, well, I'm going to have to give up a lot of my personal information to have that kind of experience. So some people don't want to share that kind of information. But I think that's going to be more and more of that is going to be coming in the future. I think we're going to start seeing opportunities where you have trusted partners, whether they be a Google or a Microsoft or somebody else, where you're going to share your profile. And then you're going to have things delivered to you, and your experiences and the places you visit are going to be tailored, customized, if you will, to who you are and what you believe. And I think that'll be a really, in my opinion, a positive step forward.
Yeah, so I was going to comment that if you know a Christian is real, and you coined a phrase here, which I don't know if it's your own, but it's an interesting way to think of it. You talk about your e-me, basically your online persona, and we know that a lot of people on the web are very different people on the web. But as Christians, but not only are we challenged by God to be real, to be His ambassadors, to be His representatives, but also do that wherever we go, whether that's our e-me or whether that's our real me. However it is, very interesting way to kind of associate that with something that you also call your e-conscience and and how important that is that those be God-pleasing.
I totally agree. And I think one of the biggest problems is the problem of duplicity online. And mm-hmm. Proverbs 11:3 talks about duplicity can bring to our downfall, and meaning dual character or dual people have one life in the real world and kind of a church and with their friends, and then online they're anonymous and they're somebody else and they're doing things. I think it's a big temptation for a lot of people, but the more authentic you are, I think there's going to be opportunities to offer a different kind of experience online. I also mentioned in there, it's kind of like, think of it as almost the internet's still out there. I think there's still going to be the good and the bad and the evil. I'm not saying censorship. I'm not saying, I think there's going to be freedoms that are going to be out there, and certain people are going to do that. But it's almost like a camera lens into the internet. And, what are you looking at online? Mm-hmm. And what are you interacting with? And I think there's going to be opportunities to grow in that area.
Right.
It's really exciting, Dan. We really appreciate your time today. I wondered if you could share information about your book, about your website, where people could find out more about what's in Virtual Integrity.
Thank you again, Sally, and thank you, Martin, for this opportunity. There is a book website, Virtual Integrity Book, one long word, virtualintegritybook.com is the book website, and I have a blog in there where I blog. My blog is called Faithfully Online. I actually have a couple other security blogs at CSO Magazine and Government Technology Magazine, but virtualintegritybook.com is the website, and Virtual Integrity, Faithfully Navigating the Brave New Web is the name of the book. You can get it at many different bookstores, get it available online at Amazon and Baker Bookhouse and just a variety of other bookstores online, Amazon. I think that there's just a number of different ways you can get at the content.
Great. I would assume, just in my quick read of the book, that there's something in here for almost anybody: parents, people in technology, like Sally and myself, those people thinking about it, those people worried about it. I think there's something in here for all those folks, and you cover, in my mind, a lot of corners, that people think about and some that they don't. So a very practical book, and thanks so much for writing it, and also, Dan, for taking some time to talk a little bit about it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I really hope, and God blesses your ministry. I think this is important because it's an important aspect of everyone's life, and the internet and our ministry as churches and as individuals and as companies, they're becoming more and more integrated. So, just pray that God would bless everyone as they use their online resources for His glory.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Dan.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
So one of the things that was interesting to me, Sally, when he talked about virtual integrity was the fact that our virtual lives, our digital lives, really should be no different than our, you know, quote-unquote real lives, our flesh and blood lives.
Absolutely. And I think we all battle that temptation. We see it played out before us where maybe people use different language than they would use face-to-face or, surf to different sites or
right.
expose,
there's
you know.
There's an anonymity built into the web of sorts.
Right. And so, you know, and it's follow you wherever you go. And so you just really have to take your Christian values to heart and use them in everything you do, not just in your face-to-face life, mm-hmm. but in your virtual life as well.
Right. Dan brought up a software program, accountability software application called Covenant Eyes. And maybe we should just talk a little bit about the difference between content filtering and accountability software, because they really are two different categories. We've talked in the past about content filtering, and a lot of the people who listen to the show have offered good programs that do that, because many of them are responsible for that either in their church or their school or their Erie Lutheran High School. Content filtering basically stops or tries to stop or attempts to stop bad things from coming into your network. And I'm not just talking about viruses, but anything that would be objectionable on the web. So it has a database of all the things that you may not want the people in front of the computer screen to see or be able to navigate to. Accountability software is a little bit different in that it doesn't filter anything, although some of them have that built-in feature if you want to turn it on. But primarily, accountability software allows you, or it's basically a logging or a tracking tool that sets you up with an accountability partner or partners or group of people who then are sent your log of web activity, where you've been, what you've spent your time doing. So the I guess this is an application of the law rather than the gospel, but I think they're both mixed in there. The threat or the knowledge that other people are looking at what you're looking at is a way to kind of keep you on the straight and the narrow. Kind of as the law is a curb, I would assume, right?
Right, and we found a lot of interesting information about accountability software out on a Wikipedia article, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Good place to go to look. And listed there were several different accountability software programs, and we'll have some links in our show notes. There's a program called X3 Watch, one by Hedge Builders, and one by K9 Web Protection.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we'll link to those in our show notes, different offerings with each one. But the one that was interesting to us, I guess, was Covenant Eyes. That's one mm-hmm. that Dan mentioned during the interview. And we actually talked with Paul Mavrogeorge way back in Wells Tech history
mm-hmm.
on episodes 10 and 11. We have an interview with Paul Mavrogeorge from Covenant Eyes. And I think, you know, if you're interested in learning more about accountability software, that's great place to start. It's kind of scroll, turn back time and listen to our interview with Paul.
Yeah, Paul is actually not from Covenant Eyes, but he's a big proponent of it. He is he's a psychologist or a counselor who spends a lot of time with internet addictions, especially pornography, and Covenant Eyes is actually an application that he recommends all the time. So, yeah, that was a great interview, and I think Paul has some great insight. He's been working with the seminary, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, on a program to teach our future pastors about these addictions and how to deal with them, and important stuff. And accountability software, I think, is a big a big tool there. There's obviously ministry applications. Our pastors are constantly in counseling situations with all kinds of addictions, including internet addictions. Pornography, I'm sure, is a growing trend within our churches as well. And these kinds of accountability software applications, I think, are good fits. But I can also think of applications in the classroom, even in our on the elementary school level. Obviously, every parent should be using some kind of content filtering in their home. But I would view accountability software as that next step. So as somebody maybe gets into upper grades, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, into high school, you may want to think about using accountability software rather than pure content filtering to introduce the concept of, the web is what it is. I mean, there's everything out there on the web, but your faith needs to walk with you as you go out there. So the self-control, the discipline necessary, and this is maybe just training wheels. Maybe that's a good way to put it, training wheels for the web as you think about how you help yourself keep that virtual integrity, as Dan puts it.
Yeah, the timing of this just couldn't be better for me, Martin. I have an 8th grader just confirmed finishing up school this week, and and he used his confirmation money and savings to buy his first laptop computer. So, you know, the time is right to have those conversations as he begins that virtual pathway that, you know, is going to follow him.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and we should caution, and Dan did too in the interview, that this is not a be-all, end-all to keep everybody safe. There are ways around content filters. There are ways around accountability software, and the people who are really determined to get around them and hide that kind of stuff can do it. That's where there is no substitute for that conversation or those daily or weekly or regular conversations with our children, with those people that, you know, that we're in a relationship with, to say, hey, faith is important to us and to our relationship and to our relationship with God, and make sure that becomes a part of everything that we do.
Absolutely.
All right. So I hope you all enjoyed that interview. Again, thanks to Dan for taking some time out of his busy schedule. And I would suggest getting a copy of the book. I think it's a good read and worth the time to take, I think, for parents, for anybody in technology. It just is a good awareness-raising kind of a book where he raises some things that you may not have thought about. And I surf the web a little bit differently after reading the book. I think there's some good to that. So, up next, our new technology showcase. And Sally, you have uncovered something that would be of interest, especially to our geeks out there, I think.
I hope so, Martin. All the buzz this past weekend on the internet was about Wolfram Alpha.
Wolfram, yeah.
Sorry, I put a G in there, and I've typed it a million times, and I still want to put a G in there.
Yeah.
I got a link from Pastor Guy Marquardt via Delicious to point me to it. I read a lot of blog posts and a lot of buzz around it, and what Wolfram Alpha is basically a new search engine. But the creator, a guy whose last name is Wolfram, so that's where the name comes from, touts it as a fact search engine. Instead of just pointing to things, Wolfram Alpha has some answers for us. And it basically attempts to compute whatever there is to be computed about a question. So, for instance, if you typed in San Francisco to Tokyo, maybe you're going to be taking a trip, it's going to actually show you maps of the Earth and showing you where your trip is going to take place. It's going to calculate the distance. It's going to provide for you populations of the two cities and different demographic information around the two cities. So you're getting more than just links to web pages to go and search for your answers, but you're getting actual computed data as a result of your search. Another example, and there actually, if you visit the WolframAlpha.com website, there's a whole page full of examples. But another example I thought might be interesting with ministry applications is just looking up demographic information. If you're going into a new community, you can look up city, county, state demographics on Wolfram Alpha, and also unemployment rates and all different kinds of slices of data around a particular location. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot of math, computational kind of results you can draw out of it. Basically, if you ask it a question, a mathematical question, it will come up with answers for you and graphs for you and things like that. So kind of a look into the future maybe of what search is going to turn into, not just pointing us to places, but actually giving us answers and things. They have a blog if you're interested in reading more about it, or if you just Google the words Wolfram Alpha, you're going to get linked to lots of blogs that have been writing about what it was like. They targeted Friday night as the actual rollout period, actually Green Minish time at midnight on Saturday, but it was supposed to come out at Friday night, 8 Pacific time, and they were a little bit late.
Mm-hmm.
And when they rolled out, there was this massive amount of traffic on their website, so some of the early people, you know, the site just clogged up for them. They couldn't get results from the search engine, but I think it's kind of calmed down a little bit now. I've been out on the site and gotten results very quickly, and it's just really interesting to play around with, to look at some of their examples and their FAQ, just to kind of contemplate what the future of search is going to be like.
I played around a little bit with it, and I actually heard a podcast with an interview of Wolfram, and he doesn't classify it as a search engine. So if you go in expecting it to be Google, I think you'll be disappointed. It's all in the criteria or the query that you give the field there, what kind of results you get. And if you're interested, try some of those examples. So enter your birth date, for instance. You can enter your first name. I thought that was kind of interesting. If you enter your first name, Sally, I don't know if you did this, but it'll give you a lot of data about your first name, how many other people have it, how many people estimated are alive today with that first name, what percentage of the population might have that first name, and kind of an age distribution graph, which I think is kind of interesting, plus a history for U.S. birth. So it actually goes back into the census, which is public record, and gives you in charts how many people were born with that first name or were given that first name in their year of birth. And interestingly enough, I just did Martin, for instance, and the year that had the most number of Martins was about the year I was born. So I guess this is totally believable. Now that's trailed off, which I guess is okay right now because fewer and fewer people are called Martin. I don't know what Sally shows up. But most people with my name are, you know, closing in, unfortunately, on 50. So very accurate stuff. So I don't know what ministry application is here, but I think it's an emerging technology, as you mentioned, that may have some ministry uses for research especially. I did a couple sample queries and didn't get much back looking for percentages of denominations or reasons for church shoppers, you know, selection criteria, that kind of thing. I think that's all coming as the web gets smarter and all this data is out there. But again, it's not your typical search engine. It almost gives you, rather than results like Google would, it gives you almost a report. So I can see students, you know, coming here at some point and typing in the right criteria and having it essentially do their homework is kind of how I would envision it going. If you know how to, it's all, the key is always entering the right query or the criteria that'll give you the desired results. So, interesting stuff, though. Very interesting.
Yeah, I noticed some of the things on the page are clickable. It's not real obvious what you can click on. But when you do, then they give it to you in a copyable format, a plain text format.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of light. A lot of niceties built into the system at the bottom of the page. After all your query results, you can get a PDF version of what your results were, and so just a lot of nice things built into it that are going to allow it to be a really functional tool for folks as we begin to use it more and more.
Right. Yep. I just typed in Draper for the fun of it, Sally. I don't know. You should do that and see where that ranks as a surname. And the ethnic breakdown of it, all kinds of information there. So You know, you're one of 11,601 people with that surname. Interesting.
Very interesting, yes.
All right, let's go on to our picks of the week.
Yeah, I had just a quick blog that I wanted to share. It's called 180 Technology Tips. And these are just short little tips, basically Microsoft-centric. So there's software tips around Microsoft Windows, Outlook, PowerPoint, Excel, and Word. And then there's some general tips about the internet and about computer hardware. But they're in very digestible bites. That's what I really like about it. You don't get overwhelmed by the information they're trying to share with you. And there's 180 of them. So the site was built so that you could subscribe to it and get one per day during the regular winter months, the school year months. So they're just wrapping up that cycle here near the beginning of June. So if you wanted to subscribe to it again, you could start again in September. But all of the content is actually there on the site. And I was really thinking of it from a teaching perspective. This would be a great thing to send people to. Say you're teaching Microsoft Word or whatever, you might pull out some of the best tips that are posted here and link to them or whatever. Just really easy to understand. I'm looking at example technology tip number 7. Is the anatomy of a web address. And it's just explaining domain names and subdomain names and the top-level domain names and things like that, so that you understand what's making up the different parts of a web address. So very common sense kind of approach.
Sounds real useful.
Not overwhelming people with technology, but giving them something that's easy to understand.
For the common man and woman.
Right, and it's at 180techtips.com, and we'll have a link in our show notes.
Cool, very good. I'm going to pick a software, an open source software release that came out, well, it's been out for a little while, by Sun, called VirtualBox. Sally, you've heard of virtualization technology, things like Virtual PC or Parallels or VMware, where they basically allow you to have a little software application that hosts another a whole other operating system. So you essentially can have two operating systems on your machine running at once, or multiples, actually, not just two. You have the host application, and as I've said before, I'm running Windows 7 now, very happy with that. But there are times where I need to run Windows XP and run programs in there that only work with XP, or want to get the XP experience if I'm doing some training, as other people don't have Windows 7, or I want to give them a view of what this would look like on XP for testing or for training, whatever. But VirtualBox is from Sun at virtualbox.org. Works exactly like Parallels and VMware and all the other virtualization technology out there. But for one, it's free. And for two, extremely lightweight and I think very stable. I've only been using it for a little while. I installed XP in all of about 20 minutes. You know, so the installation of the VirtualBox and XP was all of, you know, less than a half an hour to get things up and running. Networking worked right out of the box. It recognized my USB drive. It recognized my CD drive. That's the problem with some of these virtualization technologies, is sharing of some of these peripherals makes it a little more challenging. But this one really just worked right out of the box, and I would, those that need to do this kind of thing, and there are many, many different applications for this, this might be something to consider. Again, it's free. It's constantly updated. There's a large community backing it, and it'll run, which is the great part, it'll run on any host operating system. As I mentioned, I installed it on Windows 7. It'll work on Linux. It'll work on Macintosh. It'll work on Solaris. It'll work on 32-bit, 64-bit. I haven't really found a combination that it won't work on. So I would highly recommend VirtualBox at virtualbox.org.
Good stuff, Martin. Thanks for that.
Yep.
We mentioned earlier in the show that this is the week of seminary call service, concert, and graduation, and so we wanted to just include a link in our show notes once again to our streams.wells.net/site/live page, where all of those events will be streamed live. I'm looking forward, of course, to the call service and graduation service. services, but just the MLC concert just whet my appetite for more of that great music that our school choirs perform. And this concert in particular on Thursday evening is going to celebrate Ascension, because Thursday the 21st is Ascension.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So they're
going
to have an Ascension focus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tune in. The schedule's posted online, and you don't want to miss these exciting events.
Very good. Community feedback. Lots of people talking to us again. What are they saying?
Well, we got a really great comment from Jeremy Johnson. He actually posted it out on our show notes website. And it kind of covered a lot of different topics, starting with our show last week, where one thing I mentioned was using the site Animoto.com to create slideshow videos with various photos and things. And the fact that you can do that as an educator and get a free account, and then their FAQ section had information about extending your Gmail account to have separate accounts for your students by using the plus sign and some text string, a number or letter combination. You can have basically separate Gmail accounts per se that all wrap into the high-level Gmail account, the main username. And Jeremy just had some interesting applications of that. He says, I really like the Gmail extensions. Adding plus something to your email address allows you to do a lot of interesting things. For one, it allows you to easily filter your incoming mail. For example, I signed up on the Wells Tech listserv using plus Wells Tech extension to my mm-hmm. address. And I post to Wells Tech sites using that same extension. I can filter all incoming Wells Tech related email easily by checking what email address is being used. You can also use the feature as a junk filter. For example, if you sign up for a service but are afraid they might send you unwanted ads, sign up using an extended email address.
Mm-hmm.
You can also use the Gmail interface to send email from an extended address. In fact, the Wells Tech listserv won't publish my email unless I send it from that extension, because that's what I used to sign up for.
Very cool. So, and that was just a total revelation to me. I thought I was fairly Gmail savvy because I've been using it for a number of years, but that is a great feature.
And, you know, Martin, I went out on the Gmail site and tried to find it documented somewhere, and I couldn't for the life of me find
that right?
it documented. I guess I don't
feel as bad then.
Yeah, but, yeah, I'm really excited about that feature, especially, you know, in dealing with student accounts and things. But,
oh,
but
yeah, awesome.
You know, mm-hmm. ramifications of it. It's really exciting.
Right.
Jeremy's also a Foxit PDF fan.
All right.
For the week.
Yeah. Sweet.
And, he also chimed in on his favorite Bible software. Last week we talked about Pastor Dan Witte recommending BibleWorks. Jeremy recommends BibleGateway.com. It's just a great online reference tool. And that's actually what I use in our mm-hmm. our school setting as well, have the kids search there. And then a couple of other interesting notes from Jeremy. He pointed us to an alternative website to Wikipedia called Conservapedia at conservapedia.com. Just kind of battling the fact that Wikipedia has some censoring and things like that related to various Christian
topics. Values, right? Yeah.
And so this is just kind of a breath of fresh air, he says, and you might want to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then just some comments about our upcoming Virtual Integrity show. So we appreciate all of Jeremy's comments. Great stuff. Great food for thought. Great links to other software resources and things.
Yep. Very good. Jason Schmitz next, and he was very active in the feedback area.
Some Twitter conversation.
That's right.
That's right. He sent us several links via Twitter to Dropio's adding web presentations. Martin, I know you're a Dropio fan.
Drop.io.
And apparently they are allowing web presentations as well, no software required or anything. So I haven't had a chance to check that out, but sounds very interesting. He also provided a link to an open source alternative for computer lab management software, and it's a cross-platform solution. Unfortunately, I don't have the name of it in front of me, but I'll make sure and find that link and include it in the show notes. So if you're looking for computer lab management software, Jason has a suggestion for you.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, he gave us a link to a blog post that explains how you can link to YouTube videos in a specific spot in the video. So say you're only interested in showing the video starting at 1 minute and 10 seconds, not the whole beginning spill or whatever, but right into the video at a specific point. You can manipulate the video URL to indicate where you want the video to start.
Okay.
So this is pretty sweet. Maybe you found the perfect video for a Bible class illustration or whatever, but you don't want to play the whole thing. So nice thing to tuck into your tool belt as something to use in presentations and things.
Yep.
And then finally, he gave us a link to an online Bible baseball website. And I haven't checked it out yet. Jeremy, I'm sorry, I'm confusing my J's.
Jason
said that this came from his pastor, but Pastor Helwig apparently doesn't have a Twitter account, so he had to Twitter it for him. So we appreciate that link.
A proxy Twitterer of sorts. Yes.
There you go.
Okay. All right, more?
Yeah, there's more. We also heard from Vicar Michael Johnson. He sent us a link to a brand new page on Facebook for St. Andrew Lutheran Church in Wanakee, Wisconsin. And they've put up a really nice Facebook page, and you can become a fan if you have a Facebook account. And just kind of check out what they're doing there at St. Andrew and how they're using Facebook to communicate, you know, with those that are interested in their ministry there.
Beautiful.
And then finally, we heard from David Savatsky. David works in our Wells Missions office, and I believe you have a voicemail for us from David.
I do. Here we go.
Hey, Martin. This is your friend upstairs, Dave Savatsky. I just want to let you know I was listening to the podcast. I think it's awesome. You guys are at episode 71. I have a particular interest in the evangelism Toolbox DVD. Our church, Living Word in Waukesha, has been using the DVD. In fact, had a couple people watch the second DVD about church image in the community, and we're going to just kind of summarize it. And our recommendation was there's so much information, and it was so good that we actually should just watch it as a committee. So we started to watch the first chunk with Pastor Turiff. And then we'll take the next two at our next two meetings. So, and it was so good from our committee meeting that we watched it or showed it during our ministry planning day this past Saturday, and really got the creative juices flowing. You know, people had some ideas. We came up with a whole string of ideas as a result of that. So that was great. I also wanted to tell you that I've been using Windows 7, both the beta and the release candidate. I have a PC at home that's been running the beta. I'm a big computer gamer. It hasn't had it's had one issue with one of the games, but it's kind of a touchy game anyways. But everything else seems to be working just fine. I'm really impressed with the just the visual effects and how it handles everything. And like I said, that was just the beta. I also ran the Windows 7 beta, and now the release candidate is on my MacBook Pro, running boot camp and dual boots, and both have functioned just fine. I'm running the Windows 7 64-bit, just loaded it on the other day. I've had no issues, and it's really smooth, so I would also greatly endorse Windows 7. I'll be buying that when it comes out, and I've had Windows XP. I had Vista Ultimate 64-bit, which was not horribly impressed with. That's been kind of buggy at best. Finally, with Service Pack 1, they seem to have fixed a lot of the issues. But up until then, I had a lot of sound driver issues, many reloads. It was just kind of clunky. Several things were kind of annoying in it. And Vista did get a bad rap, but some of it was pretty founded. So yeah, I just want to say thanks for putting that out there, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Dave.
I'm a Vista 64 user on my home computer, so I'm anxious for Windows 7.
And wow, how do you think it is?
Well, I haven't been brave enough to download the Release Canada.
No,
I'm
on
still
Vista.
Using. I've had a few issues, probably more learning curve than anything else, but yeah. I guess I was expecting a little bit better performance on a 64-bit platform, and so I'm ready to see some memory performance type issues improvements.
Okay. If you would like to contribute your voicemail, your Twitter, your comments, your emails, whatever, to the show and get in our community feedback section, if you've got something to share or would like to comment on something that we've talked about in the past, easy to do, right, Sally?
That's right. Our show notes website is at wellstech.wells.net, and we always post lots of ways to contact us. You can leave comment right there on the webpage. You can email us at wellstech@wells.net. You can leave us a voicemail at 414-375-2334, or you can contact us via our Facebook page, via Delicious, or the Wells Tech listserv, or Twitter. So lots and lots of options there. We invite you to join the community and also visit our Wells Tech Wiki at wellstechwiki.wells.net and add your 2 cents worth there. We'd love to hear from you.
Beautiful. Thanks. Next week, we have our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz, joining us. We always look forward to that. Gail brings a lot of experience to the table, and she kind of lives and breathes classroom technology. And we're going to be talking about video in the classroom. Many of you are maybe familiar with United Streaming. There's another service that's offered through the parish school's office called Learn 360. And we hope to have a representative of Learn 360 on the show in an interview. So look forward to that next week. Once again, thank you to all of our listeners. We're so pleased that you decide to spend an hour or so with us each week. Continue to do that. Spread the word. And join us next week. Let's close the show, as we always do, with a Wells-featured musician. This is the group Koine from St. Marcus Lutheran Church here in Milwaukee. They're going to be singing Christ is Our Cornerstone from their album Koine 2. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Christ is our cornerstone, on Him alone we build. With His true saints alone, the courts of heaven are filled. On His great love, our hopes we place, of present grace and joys above. Oh, then with hymns of praise, these hallowed courts shall ring. Our voices we will raise, free in one to sing, and thus proclaim in joyful song, both loud and long, that glorious name. Hear, gracious God, do now and evermore draw near. Accept each faithful vow and all your children here, and more on those who pray each holy day your blessing pour. Here may we gain from heaven the grace which we implore, and may that grace once given be with us evermore.